How could the recent volatility in the stock market affect your retirement? Are you watching the numbers go up and down? We are too. Good morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening out there. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through the WJCT app. Just ahead, wow, the Dow has been a roller coaster the last few days, but our expert says not everybody should be worried about their retirement. We'll talk to him in just a minute. What are your questions? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, our political analyst Michael Stansky weighs in on the Russia probe. Plus, it's called the Black Panther Challenge. We'll tell you how you can be part of helping Duval kids go see the new Black Panther movie. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the stock market is trying to rebound after a volatile couple of days. They include Monday's big free fall that resulted in the Dow and the S&P wiping out virtually all of their 2018 gains so far. So, what does all this mean for your retirement portfolio? And should you consider moving away from stocks for the time being or just stand pat? Jacksonville's retirement coach Adam Wolf is here to talk about the markets and give you some advice. He's one of the area's leading certified financial planners. Adam, good to see you. Good morning.
Great to see you, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. Have you been following the wildly fluctuating market? What are your questions, concerns? Get on the line, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we always welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. And so, okay, what happened Monday? What led to that huge collapse? It set a record.
Yeah, so, over the last 5 or 6 days, the market has been down approximately 8%. And so that was a very fast decline. It was very volatile decline. There was lots of selling happening out there. The good news is that yesterday, the market bounced back a couple percentage points. So the market's supposed to open up today a little bit down. But, all in all, a lot of the overall, volatility that's happening in the markets right now is due to a couple major factors. And one is it's the expectation of rising interest rates. And so we've been in an environment for low interest rates for a long, long time now, ever since the recession and the market collapse back in 2008. In early 2009, we've had this low interest rate environment. And what does that do when interest rates start to rise? For consumers, for folks out there, it makes borrowing costs more. It means we can't spend as much. And then also for companies, it does the same thing. So, and worse, I think, in the general scheme of things, the government, with all the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of debt, it costs more to borrow there as well. So less money to purchase things and make, companies do better in the market. That's one of the major reasons why the overall collapse happened.
And overall, indicators show the global economy growing, corporate earnings rising. We just saw tax reform pass. Those were all cheered by pro-business interests. And so the market taking such a nosedive has left, I think, a sense of unease this week, in spite of the numbers stabilizing as of this morning.
Sure. I think what's happening is that, the growth numbers that are coming out throughout the country at the different Fed levels, they're looking good and looking better than they've been in a long, long time. So what happens is that the typical investors out there at the Wall Street level, they see that as a downside. And I see it as an upside because it means that, we're growing, we're able to hire more folks and do that type of thing. But for investors, a lot of them see that as more costs and increasing wages being a detriment to stocks. And so that's one of the other issues that led to this snap volatility.
It's 549-2937 to connect with Jacksonville's retirement coach, Adam Wolf. And so you see this as an opportunity for investors. What about the average person who has a 401k and they just want to make it to retirement with hopefully enough to retire on? And that's a worry I think that millions of Americans have. am I just going to be able to have enough to live on when I retire?
Yep. It all depends on where you are within your age category and your specific situation. A lot of us remember 2008 and the crash at 2008. And a lot of us also remember 2000, 2001, and 2002 with the dot-com crash. So for most folks who are nearing retirement, they have already had a couple of these major meltdowns happen, and they don't want to have that happen again. So when you plan for retirement, you know, whether you're, 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old, you need to have a plan. But if you're nearing retirement, you need to have that discussion with yourself and with your spouse and with a financial advisor, a certified financial planner specifically is who I'd recommend, to have a plan to take care and adjust for the risk before things like this happen so you can ride it out.
Have the plan. And what other advice do you have for a pre-retiree or a retiree who's concerned right now and who might have lost a lot of their value,
yep,
a lot of their savings?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So since 2009, the bottom, we have had unprecedented growth of the markets, and lots of money has been made over that period of time. We have gone 9 years without a major stock market correction of over 20% for more than 3 months at a time. So this is sort of new to a lot of people. But the advice would be for anyone to know what you're paying in fees. That's one of the biggest deals. I've met with folks that they come in and they have a managed investment account or a 401k where fees are pushing anywhere from 2.5% to 3% a year. And you go out, 20, 30, 40 years of a retirement, you do the math. That's tens of thousands of dollars that you're not keeping in your pocket. We need to analyze that. That's number one. And number two, looking at the overall risk level and stress testing, how much risk you have in your overall 401k before things like this occur. Because if you have too many aggressive positions in your accounts and those things go down significantly, you need to know that. And so when I meet with people, some folks have, I'm okay, I have a moderate account. But when you actually dive into what they own, it has more risk than they thought and more risk than they should at that specific time within their life.
Now, a minute ago, Adam, you mentioned that the Fed is expected to raise interest rates. When that happens, how do you expect the markets to react?
A lot of it's already priced in to where, the 10-year treasury is the cost of, it's basically borrowing with our government for 10 years. And that rate has come up significantly to almost 3% now. And people say, well, 3%, that's not a lot, but from where it came from, it's gone up a lot. So it based on where rates are going, I don't foresee our government having the fortitude to have rates too high. So they're going to do some potential things to reduce those rates because it's going to cost them way too much in debt service on the interest of the debt that we now have $20 trillion plus dollars on.
That's another concern. Yeah, that's something. That's another conversation for another day.
I'm not here to depress us at this point.
Jacksonville's retirement coach, Adam Wolf, always great to see you. And thanks for stopping by this morning.
Alyssa, thank you very much.
A quick break. Later in the hour, we're going to tell you who's being honored this month with Episcopal Children's Service's annual Children's Champions Award, some of the leading lights in this community. But up next, you've heard about the Nunez memo rocking Washington. The latest on that issue from our own analyst, Michael Stansky, and how Jacksonville is taking the Black Panther Challenge. All of that ahead here on the show. Keep listening.
I'm Rick Mullaney, Director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Join me for WJCT's quarterly program, Policy Matters. On each installment, we look at how public policy affects our lives. Join the conversation as we speak with Fox News contributor and former Hillary Clinton spokesman, Mo Lathy, on the state of our national politics. That's on the next Policy Matters, Thursday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators. WJCT and the Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
We were absolutely forbidden from falling in love with Muslims. I mean, by the time I was 10, I knew that when a Christian Arab girl falls in love with a Muslim, one or all of the following would happen. She is disowned, her mother gets a heart attack, or she dies in an honor killing.
Join us for stories about the things we do in the name of love. That's next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's been the talk of Washington for weeks now. A controversial 4-page memo put together by House Intelligence Committee Chairman California Congressman Devin Nunes and his staff. Some of Nunes' fellow Republicans say the memo proves bias at the top of the FBI. The president agrees. Democrats say that's just not true. They've issued their own memo, a much more detailed one. And they say the investigation proves a link of coordination between the Kremlin and the Trump campaign. The White House is reviewing the Democrats' counter memo, and it will be up to the president as to whether that one is released to the public. Jacksonville attorney Michael Stansky, former special agent with the U.S. Secret Service and former U.S. Air Force Judge Advocate General, or JAG, is an occasional analyst here on the show on all things related to Washington and everything going on with regard to this investigation. And he joins us now with his thoughts on the memo and more. Michael, good to talk to you.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
And what are your thoughts on the memo and the investigation? Give us a call, 549-2937, as we talk with Michael Stansky. And you think that this memo, which has been, you know, so much has been made out of it, but you see this as symbolic of a larger issues, and what are they?
I think that there's long-term issues with this. So we start off that there's really not too much short-term political gain. I mean, this memo was made for cable news to fit the 30-second soundbite. But the long-term damage this does, not just to our internal governance, so the governance and the relationship between the DOJ, the intelligence community, the administration, and Congress, but it's also going to have some damage for our intelligence activities around the world. If you were a foreign national who is being recruited to spy for the United States in Beijing, in Moscow, in Tehran, and you now think that you can be outed because of the whim of a California congressman, that's going to give you a second thought on whether you're going to help us out. And that is incredibly damaging, and that's going to be a long-term impact.
Because Nunes revealed classified information in the memo, that certainly within the halls of the Department of Justice, that was seen as crossing the Rubicon. Is that fair to say? On the other hand, Republicans cheered that move and saw that as exposing corruption within these agencies. Your take?
I don't see any corruption that has been really exposed here, because the memo is lacking all of the details that you really want. And even the White House's memorandum that released and authorized this memorandum, the what came from the White House counsel's office, even discusses the fact that this is an interpretation of intelligence. This is not the actual core intelligence itself that went in front of the FISA court.
Let's explain the FISA court more broadly, Michael, because until all of this became controversial, most Americans, let's be frank, they didn't really understand this process. This is a complicated process with many checkpoints, many sort of fail-safe procedures that one must go through, a lot of boxes you have to check.
Absolutely.
So let's explain the process.
And to be clear, the boxes that have to be checked and the procedure are written by statute. So it is not a policy of the Department of Justice. This is procedures that must be followed because Congress passed a law and the administration passed it. So the basic procedure is that you're going to start with some type of investigation of an individual, a group of individuals. From there, the agents, typically of the FBI, are going to want to seek a wiretap or some type of real-time collection of information from as part of the investigation. They're going to take that to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And that court is made up of federal judges. Many of them are in D.C., but a lot of them are federal judges throughout the country. In fact, the statute even lays out that the judges, you must have a cross-section of geographic makeup of the judges. And so they are federal judges like we have here in Jacksonville and Tampa. And so this is like an extra duty for them. And they are chosen by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to serve for a short term on that. They don't do that job, the FISA job, full-time. The ones that are out of D.C. go up for about a week at a time. They review these documents. They review these applications. And then they go back to their regular caseload wherever they are from, whichever city throughout the United States. What's important to really note about the FISA court is that they have been trying to be more transparent. They put out statistics each year on the number of Americans that have been subject to the these applications. And they've also set up a really unique and interesting program where they allow private attorneys that have been properly cleared to advocate on behalf of individuals. Now, the individuals are not going to know that there's an application pending. However, it allows a little bit more transparency into a system that really needs to be kept at the highest secret.
Now, the controversy around the memo alleges that law enforcement officials were able to get the FISA warrant in part because of allegations made in a dossier that was put together by a former British spy, Christopher Steele. He was able to get a warrant from the FISA court to conduct surveillance of a guy named Carter Page. The FBI had been surveilling him since at least 2013 because they suspected him of having improper contacts with the Kremlin. And so Page went on to serve on the Trump campaign's foreign policy advisory team. Nunes, and with his memo, made the allegation that that the dossier was partisan in nature, that it was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, and that the FISA warrant was improperly granted because of the claims made in the dossier. Now, though, the House Intelligence Committee has unanimously voted to make public the Democrats' rebuttal to that, where they purport to show that that argument doesn't hold water. The president will decide whether or not to release the memo. I think it's fair to say he will probably not want to release the memo, the Democrats' version. What do you think about the argument that the Democrats are making, and what do you think the president's move will be here?
Yeah, I haven't had an opportunity to look at the Democrats' memorandum. I hear that it is longer. I think that to fully explain this to the American people, you have to go into the complexities of how not only do you get the application through, but what do you actually do when you are conducting these investigations. And let me just go into that a little bit, because when you finally get something like this approved, it is not like a switch where all of a sudden I can listen to all the communications. Typically, what's going to happen is there's going to be a large buildup. There's a lot of technical issues that need to be resolved. Plus, there are minimization procedures. So when you are listening in, you can't listen to every single conversation. It has to be, you have to limit what you listen to only those conversations that have something to do with the investigation. On top of that, when we're talking about these applications, these FISA applications being authorized just on the weight of the Steele memo, that's highly inaccurate. In this case, there were multiple reapplications that were authorized. The only way that you can get those reauthorizations is when the investigation itself, the wiretap itself, is giving you new information to justify continuing to listen in. So something came out of that those conversations that were being listened to. That's the takeaway, and that's not in the memo.
We've also learned that the investigation began as a result of what's known as the Five Eyes Agreement. The friendly Western nations that our intelligence community shares information with, Great Britain, Australia, Canada, a couple of others, they tipped off the FBI and our intelligence community to what they suspected was improper contact between the Trump campaign and Russian operatives, correct?
Yes.
So that's where it began. Now we are here. Now here we are in 2018. We have this special counsel, Mr. Mueller, former FBI director, moving forward. As we wait to see whether this new memo will be released, let me get your take on these varying threads of this investigation, and then we'll go to the calls at 549-2937. We know, according to what's been reported, of at least five separate investigative angles of the special counsel's probe. The president's business deals and allegations of money laundering, particularly by his former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, and his former campaign aide, Rick Gates. Okay. Russian information operations. These were activities coordinated allegedly by the Russian government, bots and trolls, data, particularly on social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, that have been alleged to try to influence the election. Okay, that's number two. Also, the hacking of the DNC and the RNC email databases, which is sort of an ancillary angle. Improper contacts with the campaign, like the Russian ambassador. And then the fifth allegation or the fifth probe or thread, the allegations of obstruction of justice, which, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the easiest allegation to prove in court out of all of these. And the one that seems to be the farthest along.
Absolutely. But I mean, if we just take the administration kind of off the table, and the Russian Federation is not a friend to the United States, period. And that there is sufficient evidence. The Dutch have released information, really putting themselves out on a limb. The DNC
they,
hacks.
They released video, and they had video of these Russian cells called Cozy Bear and
right.
Something else bear that seemed to be engaged in active hacking. Correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so it's very clear that there have been cyber attacks, there have been information attacks that have been made against the United States. And I think everybody is waiting for Congress and the administration to say that. Because honestly, the Mueller memo or the Mueller probe, on top of looking at the administration, is really looking at what are the Russians doing? How deep and how sophisticated is their intelligence operation here in the United States? And it seems that it's growing and growing and growing, and that's not a great thing for us.
As a former Secret Service, former JAG officer, how concerned are you about this cyber war, which is really what it is? It's cyber warfare. The new battlefield now is happening online, not just in this country, but in other countries. And we've seen Russia engage in what are called active measures, right? disinformation, there's a Russian term for that, in other countries, to destabilize their democracies. How concerned are you about
this? I'm concerned, and they're doing a good job, because here I am talking to you about this Nunes memo instead of the chairman of the Intelligence Committee putting forward some cyber security measures, making it so that the country as a whole is reacting to this. So they're doing a good job. And we need to start looking at cybersecurity, not just for our own government's protection, but also the protection of our businesses, which we know the Russians have targeted, continue to target, or allow criminal activity to occur from their country and stealing our data.
How do we harden targets, particularly the social media giants that we all enjoy and use? Certainly, the platforms that are wide open to the world are soft targets.
They are soft targets.
Like Facebook and Twitter and others. How do you harden those targets?
I think it's awareness. I think that these companies should start to take active measures to either label and identify those individuals they think are putting out this misinformation. Because it's a fine balance. You want to keep free speech because we are the country of freedom. Unlike Russia that puts people away that disagree, we do not do that. So it's a fine balance. But you're going to have to go ahead and come with some measures to identify those accounts, those individuals that are putting out bad information.
All right, let's go to your calls now for attorney, former judge, advocate general, and Secret Service agent Michael Stansky. As we talk about the latest in this investigation, what are your questions, comments, thoughts? 549-2937. Chuck is at the beaches right now. Hey, Chuck. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hey, guys. Melissa, I just went and saw the movie The Washington Post. I pulled that up and pulled up the Washington Post, and they're not happy with the FBI and the way the FBI has handled this. And if you look at what the American government did under and what the Post looked at, and then you think about what the FBI did to Martin Luther King, there ain't no way on the planet I will ever trust the FBI based on what they did to Martin Luther King. And if you think they won't ever and can't possibly do anything like that to anybody else, I think you got your head buried in the sand. And so I think here's what's going to happen. We will know the truth. We will find out what happened. There are more texts and more emails that came out this morning. They used the word POTUS. So we're going to find out what happened. We will find out the truth, just like the Washington Post did. We're going to know what happened. And so I guess my question to your guest is, does he have a problem with the way the FBI treated Martin Luther King? And does he think that can ever happen again?
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Chuck. All right. And let me just add, before you answer his question, he's certainly right in that there was a lot of suspicion about the FBI during that era. But of course, it was a different group of Americans that didn't trust the FBI. It was Democrats and more liberal-leaning Americans. What is so striking to see right now, Michael, is that for the first time basically ever, now conservatives do not trust the FBI, which is a very, you know, for the most part, it's a conservative-leaning organization, always has been, because you're seeing this spectacle of conservatives within the Bureau investigating a conservative administration. And so now Republicans no longer trust the FBI. So, okay, but what about Chuck's question?
No, I mean, I think that the question's well-founded, and there have been embarrassing times in our country's history, not just with the Martin Luther King investigation by the FBI, but there's countless times. But we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so in recent time, the work that the FBI has been doing to protect us from not just intelligence activities, but terrorist activities in the United States, criminal activities in the United States, is very noteworthy, and it's very good. The FBI agents are patriots. They do good things. Whether something that happened to Martin Luther King could happen again, I really don't know. What I can tell you is that we are in a far more sophisticated time. The safeguards that have been put into place
After the Hoover era.
After the Hoover era are significant. And it's an impossible question for me to answer, but if I were a betting man, I'd say that on the balance of what's being released, the evidence of corruption is not there in this memorandum.
Hoover served, of course, for over 40 years. FBI directors now serve 10-year terms, and deliberately they're not staggered with presidential administrations that they can be insulated from the whims of politics. That's why when the president fired Jim Comey, it caused such shockwaves, because FBI directors are supposed to be guaranteed a measure of independence from politics so that if someone does come under investigation, the Bureau can do the investigation.
And just look at our previous or our directors of our FBI recently. I mean, they are very well-credentialed people. They are far better credentialed than Hoover ever was. And what's also noteworthy is look at all of their responses. Look at Ray's response as well as Comey's response to the release of these memos.
What do you mean?
I mean, they were, I believe, very damning on the response damning on the response to the Nunes memo being released.
Mike on the South Side. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, thanks for letting me join in on the conversation with this. Just to rebut the previous caller, I mean, it's worth pointing out that FISA was created in response to things like COINTELPRO and the things that were done against Martin Luther King. That's the whole reason we had these safeguards to begin with. And to your point about the folks involved now in the FBI being better credentialed, I mean, Mueller he's a Republican. Comey was a Republican. A lot of these guys are very, very seasoned veterans with strong legal minds. I think how they comport themselves says a lot. To add on, I mean, yeah, we may find out what happened, but it ain't going to happen from Nunes or Trump. It's going to happen from good, solid, scientifically fact-based investigations, not investigations that come up with spurious allegations and then try to assemble facts to fit that. And I'll continue to listen. This is fascinating. Thanks for having this.
Thank you, Mike. And he's referring to the counterintelligence program of the FBI. That was a series of covert projects, some of them illegal. They surveilled and discredited some organizations that they deemed subversive, particularly during the Vietnam and civil rights era, like MLK and others.
Right.
That whole era was when the FBI was trying to discredit King and other anti-Vietnam War activists. And so what about his comment?
No, I agree. I think that there have been a lot of changes that have been made. And even if we're going to go back a few years, I mean, look at the work the FBI did in counterintelligence in the 1980s. I mean, that was very good work they did as well as the work the CIA did. So things have changed.
But certainly, though, Michael, it cannot be denied that this has become such a partisan issue. Here's an email from a listener. Just make a one-word change in the dossier. The FBI officials' texts and emails that were released, and just change the word Trump to Obama and tell us what you think would have happened. One standard for everyone, please. Now, he's referring to the controversy over two FBI agents who were having an affair and were texting back and forth to each other saying that they did not like Donald Trump and that they needed to find a way to, I can't remember the exact wording of what they
right.
said, but that they needed to make sure he didn't get elected. And so Republicans saw that as something of a conspiracy within the Bureau to take down Donald Trump. That has since somewhat been debunked. However, what about his email that say those texts had been released and they had said, we can't stand Barack Obama, we've got to take down Barack Obama?
I don't know how this changes this investigation. I really don't. And I don't know if the listener was actually saying change Obama's name for Trump's name in the Steele dossier. And I would encourage everybody to read it. It's 35 pages. It's open source. It's out on the internet. You will find, if you read through it, that a lot of the information has nothing to do with President Trump. A lot of it has to do with the Russian activities where they targeted the United States in our political process. So read through the memos. I think that ultimately this FISA application, on the balance of the information that is available to the public, probably still would have gone through, no matter whose name was – whose president's name was in those memos.
I would also say as well that Paul Wood of the BBC News has done some good reporting on this, and he has verified, or his reporting has verified, some of the claims in the dossier, not all of them. Some of the dossier's claims have been independently verified, but certainly some of the more salacious claims have not. Yeah. When intelligence gathering is done, a lot of it is raw intelligence and is certainly not verifiable. That's why I think, as all of this has gotten out on television and been reported in newspapers and on TV and on radio, it's certainly inevitably become so partisan, because so much of it is so tawdry and so explosive.
And that's what they're picking up on. I haven't heard really one Russian name mentioned on cable news from the Steele dossier. And he names a number of people in that. And let's not forget that Steele was a MI6 agent, like the British equivalent of the CIA. And he was effectively the station chief before he retired of the Moscow station for MI6. So if somebody had a question on what's going on in Russia, he's probably the guy to go to, just as that, for that background.
Zareem on the north side. Go ahead, Zareem. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. President Trump is a dictator. He's like a Hitler. This man here, he's a constant liar and a thief. He's using to divide and conquer. He divided the Congress, the Senate, and they supposed to be so intelligent they can't see this. This man have every institution there. He's caused division. He's guilty, and this is why he's doing all that he's trying to do to try to discredit this investigation. He's in bed. When they trace that money trail on him, they may have him for treason. Mr. Mueller's like a pit bull on his trail.
All right, Zareem, we don't know if he's guilty or not guilty, and I think comparing anyone to Hitler is probably a mistake. But I appreciate the call. Thanks for the call. Okay. His call shows all of us where emotions are with this president right now, both positive and negative. And
absolutely.
As we continue to take calls about this, it's gotten to the point where people are so angry either about how much they dislike this president or how angry they are about this investigation and how they feel it is so unfair, that they feel it is such an unfair attack on this president, that it really has become almost impossible to have civil discussions with others about it if you feel strongly either way. And I don't mean to cut Zareem off, because clearly he feels strongly. But I appreciate why he feels that way. But I'm just trying to make the point that it's gotten to that point in this country.
No, I think that you're right. But this is what I'd say, Melissa, is you need to kind of cut the politics out of this and recognize it for what it is. And it seems every single day more and more apparent that the Russian Federation, th- through multiple means is trying to cause us harm in the United States. And I don't want to sound like Chicken Little and the sky is falling, but I think that that's the discussion that we need to have. And unfortunately, that discussion is getting cut out. Largely, you know, cable news is not allowing that conversation to go through because it is a complex conversation.
It is. And unfortunately, it doesn't drive ratings. And people do need to read more and understand that this is something that other countries, particularly in Europe, have been dealing with for many years and are much more familiar with. This is new for us.
Absolutely.
And so when we talk about Vladimir Putin and his overall aims and what he's trying to accomplish geopolitically, let's talk about that for a minute.
And let's recognize that Vladimir Putin is a former KGB case officer.
Right.
So when you're talking about manipulating information, intelligence collection, espionage, He is the leader that they would want. He is built as a war leader. He is not built as a peacetime leader.
He's also, by the way, the richest man in the world. People, Americans don't know that about him. He is the richest man in the world. Ill-gotten gains. And most of his largesse is stolen.
Absolutely. So that there are a lot of problems occurring internally in Russia because of the fact that it's a very corrupt country where a handful of individuals have been given extreme wealth and power, and they're pretty much running the country without any type of accountability. And when the folks do try and hold them accountable, they are thrown in jail.
Or killed.
Yeah. And so
just last week, there were protests in the street in Russia. The opposition leader was thrown onto a bus, thrown into jail. He may be dead soon. He may be given a glass of polonium-laced tea.
Right.
He may be thrown off the side of a building. That tends to happen a lot there.
And don't forget that the political assassination that you mentioned did not happen in Russia. It happened in the United Kingdom. So the fact that it's old times in Russia. They're continuing what they were doing back in the 80s to now. And that's a problem. That's something that the president needs to address. It's something that Congress needs to address. And it's not going to happen if we're just talking about this memo.
You think all of us need to put pressure on our representatives to focus on this issue more broadly?
Absolutely. And I think that people need to read these things. Read the Nunes memo. If the Democratic response is released, read it. Read the Steele dossier. Read these documents because they are being skewed by the cable news, which is certainly problematic.
They are all available online, and I always appreciate you being here to talk with us. Appreciate your insights, Michael. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate you
being here. He's Jacksonville attorney Michael Stansky, former special agent with the U.S. Secret Service, former U.S. Air Force judge, advocate general, and our occasional analyst here on the program. Well, much more still ahead later in the hour. It's Marvel Studios' new Black Panther movie. Find out about the Black Panther Challenge and what one man is doing to make sure as many local kids as possible get to see the film. That's later. But up next, honoring the biggest children's champions of the First Coast, we'll tell you about Episcopal Children's Services Big Bash, helping thousands of kids and families here in this area. That is coming up as well. Keep listening. It's First Coast Connect here on 89.9. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
America loves its superheroes, but in real life, some say black women bear great power and an unfair responsibility.
Systemic racism, the gender pay gap, the school-to-prison pipeline, and now y'all want me to save America?
Black women have been showing up for generations. How is the nation showing up for them? The Savior Syndrome, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Jordan Klepper, host of Comedy Central's The Opposition, a satirical political show in which he delivers commentary in his persona as a far-right conspiracy theorist whose views are in sync with Alex Jones and Breitbart News.
It's all about creating enemies. It's drawing a line. It's them versus us. They hate me, and I am under attack.
Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Israel prepares to deport tens of thousands of African refugees. Some say that's hypocrisy.
Israel is a country that was founded by refugees, people that fled Europe after the Holocaust.
A government plan that could expel 40,000 people from Israel and a backlash. This next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
So in a single pack of this substance, there lies adventure, treasure, stories of love and of death, yet we casually drink this miracle every morning with cream and sugar. On the next Snap Judgment, perfect cup. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Saturdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, for decades, Episcopal Children's Services has helped thousands of kids and families in our area. It's the second largest nonprofit in town. And for years, they've presented the Children's Champions Awards, recognizing people and organizations that put kids first. Connie Stoffel, Executive Director of ECS, and Board President Derek Smith join us now with a preview of this year's Big Bash, the Children's Champion Awards. Good morning to you both. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming. And this year you're honoring some great people. Retiring UNF President John Delaney, retiring Edward Waters College President Nat Glover, pediatrician Richard Skinner Jr., and Florida Blue. Connie, that's a pretty impressive list.
Yes, thank you. We're proud to honor those, all three of those, plus Florida Blue is great.
Yes. Now, ECS is dedicated to helping children birth through age 5 build a foundation for academic success. And their families, too.
Absolutely. Family engagement is huge with us. Children are not in a cycle of their own. It's the family engagement that makes us be able to really reach the child, because they're not in a vacuum of their own. Once you reach the whole family and engage the whole family, we find that the child just grows and grows through social, emotional, and educational gains.
And, you know, Derek, I did not realize that Episcopal Children's Services started in Springfield as a single child care center and has grown enormously. Last year was a huge year for you. You've expanded your services. Connie got named an ultimate CEO. Now you're having this big event. As board chair, you've got to be feeling pretty excited about all this.
Well, absolutely, Melissa. We're quite proud of the work that Connie and her team does. And, you know, the opportunity to actually offer services in counties outside of the immediate Jacksonville area is giving ECS greater exposure across the state. And I've made it as a personal priority to visit some of the centers. And it's really exciting to go in and to see the great work that's being done by the team.
That's right. Now, people can support what you guys are doing, both in Duval County and in surrounding counties, by coming to the Children's Champion Awards, where you're going to honor John Delaney, Nat Glover, Richard Skinner, and Florida Blue. And I'm excited to be emceeing this event as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Actually, growing like we're growing is exciting, not only for the growth and be able to serve more children. We're serving more children in more vulnerable rural areas. And to be able to do that, this is our primary fundraiser. And we are able to raise funds to help more low-income children. We have to raise match, which is a really interesting concept in the communities where we serve, which Duval is one of them, as well as all the outlying counties. And we can do that through community events, community volunteerism, donations. Money donations are always fine, but we can do it through other ways too, such as loaning you can loan people to come in and volunteer, paint, whatever. So and we really need it in any way that
in
the
any way that,
wants to help.
That people can help. And just go to ecs4kids.org and join them for the Children's Champion Awards Gala. It's February 22nd, coming up soon at the Omni. I'm looking forward to it. Connie Stoffel, Executive Director, and Derek Smith, Board President, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Now, speaking of kids, we want to tell you about an amazing effort, a GoFundMe campaign that's taking off like lightning around the country, helping as many kids as possible see Marvel Studios' new movie, Black Panther, about a black superhero named T'Challa who returns to his home after the death of his father. Take a listen to this.
My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be. Don't freeze.
I never freeze. What happens now determines what happens to the rest of the world.
In just a few days, this campaign has made tens of thousands of dollars, and the guy who started it is encouraging people all around the country to start their own. So here in Jacksonville, local political consultant Obi Umuna decided to start the Black Panther Challenge for Duval. He's going to take some kids to see the Black Panther movie. Obi, this is awesome. Good morning.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
And so you want to raise money to get as many kids to see the Black Panther movie as possible.
Correct. Correct. We started this campaign here locally with a company called Directly To, which is similar to GoFundMe, but better because any donation you make is tax deductible. So far, we've raised over $5,000.
$5,000, that's great.
To take kids to the theaters. We're able to pay for two screens. We're now on our way to paying for a third screen. And what's great about this is that we're working with local charities here in town to bring those kids. So charities like Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Not for Kids, Children's Home Services are all part of what we're doing to bring these kids to see this movie.
This is not unlike the Hidden Figures movie. People put together funds to do that as well. And so it's easy to be part of this. Any donations past the $2,000 goal will be used to go to additional tickets and get more kids going to see the Black Panther Challenge. You can email Obi right now at OBI@ulegalgroup.com and donate to the Black Panther Challenge.
Yes, thank you so much for Jacksonville really getting behind this. These kids are excited to see this movie.
Okay, email Obi right now. And if you missed that, just email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will get you the information you need to contribute to the Duval Black Panther Challenge. Sorry, we're out of time, Obi.
Thanks
for being
me
with
on.
Us. And 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.